Hello, podcasters. This is Lisa Henderson, Editorial Director of Applied Clinical Trials, and I am without my co-host, Andy Studna, today, but we will move on without him, unfortunately. But fortunately, we are with Chris Learn, who is Vice President, Cell and Gene Therapy Center of Excellence for ParkCell. So Dr. Learn has been a team leader in the registrational build-out, agency submission, and regulatory approval for five unique marketed products, two of which include Imbruvica and Keytruda. In his career prior to ParkCell, he has worked at Duke University, Merck & Company, and Astaria Oncology in various roles. So thank you, Chris, for joining us today. So your career has spanned clinical research in many roles. Can you describe some of the highlights from your journey as it relates to your current role?
Sure. I had the opportunity to train at Duke at the Brain Tumor Center, where we were developing investigator-initiated trials for patients that we would see in our glioma clinic. I worked for a neurosurgeon, and we were developing RNA-based therapies for cell therapy in these patients. And it was really gratifying, fulfilling, because whereas we aced our mechanism of action and it showed good demonstrable clinical benefit for these patients, it wasn't durable. The response didn't last. And so I think having lost my dad to cancer, it just was another opportunity to realize that this is a marathon, not a sprint. I also had the opportunity to work at Merck & Co. on Keytruda. I was the senior clinical scientist on the KEYNOTE-173 program, which was triple negative breast ex-US. And I was also the senior clinical scientist for the GBM program at Astaria Oncology, which looked at the treatment of solid tumors with poliovirus and specifically brain tumors. And those were really foundational. I've had some stops along the way at CRO that were really gratifying. I've worked with the Celgene team on the two CAR-Ts that they have now commercialized under the BMS awning. And it's been a really gratifying and fulfilling journey to have had those opportunities and simply being in the right place at the right time in certain cases.
So what spurred your interest in clinical research maybe prior to this?
Yeah, it was definitely the loss of my dad. Okay. I lost my dad when I was 18. I was an only child. My parents were older. It was just a debilitating loss, you know, for my family. And I do remember the oncologist coming to me near the end of my dad's life and just apologizing that he couldn't do anything else. And I thought that was really the instructive moment in my life where I realized, you know, I certainly didn't want that for my dad, but I also didn't want it for that doctor. So I set out to go to college and graduate school and learn as much as I could about immunology and then apply that.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss. And so now you've gone from oncology into the CGTs. And of course, there's a lot of overlap in that, right? But can you describe the current landscape of cell and gene therapies?
Sure. It's a really quickly expanding landscape. I think, you know, in the early 2010s, we saw the rise and advent of Kymriah, and then a little later on, Yescarta, which were the CAR-Ts. And as we've now moved into this segment of time, we have now seen RNA and a variety of different gene therapies move forward in a variety of different therapeutic areas and indications. Specifically in oncology, I think we have seen a tremendous investment in cell therapies, gene-modified cell therapies such as CAR-T and TCRs. I think what will likely happen is we'll move more into a combinatorial phase where we're seeing different assets paired with one another, like RNAs paired with cell therapy or gene editing and gene therapies paired with different types of other assets. And I think that's in the patient's best interest. I think for something like oncology, you really have to keep the tumor off balance. And by having very potent medicines such as gene therapy, gene editing, cell therapy, RNA, you give yourself a good shot at doing that.
That's interesting. I've never heard it described that way, keeping the tumors off balance. That makes a lot of sense, though. There's been current issues during regulatory approval related to CMCs And along with those pathways and scalability after approval, how do you envision CGTs readily advancing into the treatments?
Sure. I think in regards to the CMC challenges, it's only stands to reason because these are essentially a new form or a new type of medicine that is being brought forward. And they're going to be learning curves. They're never called growing pleasures. They're growing pains. And to get to a point where you can reproducibly produce products, cell therapy products, gene therapy products that are 100% QC'd and durable in terms of their manufacture, that's going to be something that we have to learn. And I think what agencies such as US FDA and EMA have said is that we're willing to partner with you as we go along, but we can't risk putting out products that are not at that level. So I think as we learn more and become better at producing these types of therapies, the learning curve will flatten.
Do you think there needs to be any changes in the regulatory process for these?
You know, that's a tough question. It depends on which angle you come from with it. You know, if it's a safety one, then the answer is categorically no. You know, the agencies are there to protect patients and to make sure that what is put out on the commercial market is good and reasonable in that regard. In the aspect of further developing and increasing investment in these types of therapies, I do think it's important for the agency to understand the different challenges and remits of these sponsors when they make these types of therapies. And I think the more that those sponsors and agencies work together and have a close communication, I think they'll better be able to resolve questions, queries, you know, limitations in manufacturing that may currently exist. I don't think that's hopefully optimistic. I think we're just still in such an active learning phase that until we have this, you know, more robust type of collaboration and understanding of expectations, that's where we're going to end up.
Excellent points. Thank you so much. So our audience comprises a lot of clinical operations professionals. So what, when you're conducting these trials, what is the most challenging piece that they should be aware of?
I think there's a lot of hope and hype around cell and gene therapies, and I certainly get that. I think what you have to understand is it's largely dependent on not only the therapeutic area that you're working in, but the type of asset that's being used as the therapy. And what I mean by that is you have to have certain expectation limitations in oncology with CAR-T. It will certainly be beneficial. It certainly may be superior to standard of care, but it may not be a cure. Whereas in other types of gene therapies and therapeutic areas, we are getting very close to the concept of cure. So I think as we go forward, we're going to see better clinical outcomes in particular therapeutic areas with particular types of, you know, cell and gene therapies. It just doesn't uniformly translate across the continuum. And if you're a patient, if you're a caregiver, that's a very hard message to hear because you want to believe. You want to have that faith that these therapies will do what they're proposing. It's just the science of these diseases is so complex that it's more or less a case-by-case basis.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for being here today. Greatly appreciate your time.
Of course.